Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode one of Inside the Game, brought to you by SteelSeries and Six Pool Gaming. I am DJ Wheat, and I got to tell you, I am so excited here. I feel like I am the luckiest guy in the world, because I bet you that I am going to be more like our audience members than obviously the guys that are right below me. And we have got three amazing guys representing three different races and here to talk about things that hopefully will help you learn, because I know that I am going to be abusing the hell out of their knowledge. Guys, I want to give a big welcome to our three hosts. Ladies and gentlemen, it is LG Pain User, EG Idra, and EG In Control. Guys, what is up? Everyone at the same time, tell me how you doing.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Good. That worked out.
Good,
that worked
man.
Out beautifully. We'll make rabble, sure.
Rabble, beautiful rabble. Tuesday.
We'll make sure we do that next episode as well. No, seriously, guys, I want to actually just kind of chat with each one of you. Of course, Taylor, you can't see. That's okay. But we're very happy to have you on the show representing the Terran. Are you excited, brother? New show,
yeah,
new
man.
Adventure, new journey.
Super stoked.
It's been
I'm
a long
super
time.
Stoked.
Yeah. And of course,
glad to be here with the panel. Got my good friends Idra and Jeff.
Your good
gonna
friends.
Be some great debates on the show, no doubt.
And
but yeah, I'm definitely excited.
ETs and Banshees.
We're gonna have that one. It's gonna
enough
happen.
Enough of that nonsense.
Of course, right below me, we've got the Gracken, EG Idra himself, and it's nice that finally there's a show where people are gonna say your name properly. I like it.
That is something to look forward to. I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. See, I think of everything, Greg. That's my job. So you make sure that I'll make sure you get that treatment. And of course, we've got the menacing beast, EG In Control. I am so excited to finally be able to do something with you, Jeff. We go way back, even beyond StarCraft. And I was thinking about that today, actually, In Control. And I was remembering one of the first times that I truly got to see, like, In Control. And I think it was back at a BlizzCon. There's a little TL get-together, and you're playing some games with Rhett. Yeah, do you remember that?
I do.
Those are good times.
I remember what people tell me about it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's about all I remember about it, too. How excited are you for the new show? An opportunity to educate, to answer a lot of your fans' questions, etc. What are your thoughts?
Well, I've always been a huge fan of what you do, Wheat, and it's let's get the gimmicky stuff out of the way. It's a huge honor to be working with you, first and foremost. But also, like, if I wasn't doing esports, I'd be teaching. That's my passion. That's what I want to be doing. And to combine the two, and to be able to do that and live happily is it's the life. So just kind of living the dream, and happy that you guys are helping me make that possible. So thank you.
Right on, dude. Well, you know what? I think we're going to be making a lot of other people happy, because the whole concept and the idea of Inside the Game is to really use the knowledge and the skills as a gift to the community. You know, you guys know, you've seen some of my shows, Weapon of Choice, Live on 3. We like to empower the community and give them the power to be able to call in and discuss and ask questions. And so I'm very much inspired by Day 9's Daily, and I like the fact that he puts a lot of emphasis on making people better gamers and using your guys' knowledge and, of course, having a racial difference here. Of course, I'm just going to warn you right now, I've got an extra graphic for the show, and I could just turn it on at a whim. So there can be a second Zerg at a moment's notice, just so everyone knows that. Just warning you guys. But, having the opportunity, you know, one of the things I'm looking forward to the most is the call-ins, letting people, interact with you guys. Have you guys ever, you do coaching, that's a lot of 1v1, but you've nearly never had the opportunity to kind of put yourself out there and make your knowledge available. Any of you guys, what do you guys think about that?
You get really limited stuff, like if you interact with stream viewers or kind of on State of the Game and other shows like that, but I've never done a direct call-in show before, so it will be a new experience.
And Idra, I'm not going to lie, I'm giving you away, Idra. Idra was like just a little bit, he's like, Wheat, are you positive that you want to do that? Like, yeah, dude, I am positive. And Jeff over there smiling, because I was like, Jeff, you watch. People are going to call up intelligent questions. Like, Wheat, I watch Weapon of Choice. I know what's up. And a Pain User, he'll take anything, dude. So he's like, I don't care if you ask the dumbest question on the planet, he'll take it. So
you won't even know it's sarcastic too.
get a little trolled. So guys,
unless it's like, hey, from Grack 420.
So they're all going to be like trolled. That.
Right? Only one guy wanted to be anonymous today in all of the questions that we got. So I thought that was pretty wise. I'm not sure why he wanted to be anonymous. Maybe it has to do with this question. But we're going to be jumping right into our first segment. So the way that Inside the Game is going to work is there are several different segments. Some of them might not be on every single show. Some of them will be on every single show. But these different segments are geared to bring up some more discussion and, of course, give these guys the opportunity to answer your questions, take your calls, talk about specific thing. But since this is the first episode of Inside the Game, I want to talk about you guys. And I want to let the audience get a good idea about you. You know, a lot of people, especially those new to StarCraft 2, may see you guys and go, you know, In Control just woke up one day, Pain User woke up one day, Idra woke up one day, and they were instant StarCraft pros. And, you know, you guys had a struggle too, right? I mean, you had to take it up to the top. So we're going to do our first segment, and it's called Under the Microscope. And tonight we're examining our pro players. Who wants to kick us off here and talk a little bit, you know, about yourself and up and coming and how you got to this place right here? And no one said I do, Wheat. But before I do say that, Under the Microscope, specifically this segment, is going to be about units, maps, specific strategies, where we might one week take a zealot and talk about all the things that we could possibly talk about as far as a zealot from three different race perspectives. But today, talking to the host, who wants to start? Who's rearing and ready to go? All right, then, Greg, thanks for volunteering. Greg, let's start with you. A lot of people already know that you're a Brood War pro, but you know, I want to actually go further than that. I want you to tell me about your transition from I'm a guy who loves this game to like, wow, I'm good at this game. I'm going to get better and eventually reaching your goals.
It was a really gradual kind of casual progression. I started out just playing UMSs and money maps just completely for fun, a couple of games a week maybe. And I met a professional money map player in a public game and started to get really obsessed with that and get good at that within that isolated community. And then I kind of found out about Team Liquid just looking for sites. And another friend within that team who also played loan money maps, just the combination of that and finding out that there was professional gaming, that kind of thing, kind of pushed me to move over towards loan money.
Now, when you're defining professional gaming there, Greg, are we talking about like what I defined professional gaming as back then, where it's like we went to a tournament and we won $600, but it cost us $1,000 to go to the tournament and play?
No, I found out about like Korean pro gaming through Team Liquid.
Okay. Like, I wanted to make sure we weren't talking about like the $50 local LAN league.
No.
Okay.
No, I actually found out about that later on. Like, I thought gaming was something, it was just purely for fun and casual. And then I found out, okay, it's this real professional thing with hundreds of thousand dollar salary, big televised leagues and stuff. And then I also found out there was an in-between that like I could compete in the U.S. So that came later. But and then from there, it was just a gradual progression. I always played a really mechanical, straightforward style, so that, like, there weren't big jumps in my play. I just slowly got better and faster and learned the ins and outs of the games.
When you were learning about pro gaming in Korea, did you already feel at that point that you were going to be able to do this? Like, how did you know that you were good enough to be able to do something like that?
It was kind of a funny situation. Since I played money maps, I was actually really, really good within that community by those standards. So I was already used to being really competitive about the game and being one of the best. So I was like, okay, this is a much bigger arena, and it's obviously a lot harder. But if I could do that, I can do this. And I've always been really competitive. So it's just as soon as that caught my attention, I started to play really, really hard with the focus of becoming a top-level player.
And, of course, making the tradition and keeping it alive, you're probably one of those gamers that's been in it the longest. And, I'm just very, very glad to have you here. So making that transition is always a tough one. I know that a lot of people, you know, go out there and try to become pro. They try to shoot for the stars. And, I'm not sure if everyone has it, but, we'll do our best to try to improve you guys. Let's go to Pain User. And then we're saving the best for last in control. Yeah. Pain User, talk to us in the same light. I know you and I have a special bond. Both love some Quake. Talk to me about your competitive background and how you got to where you're at.
I've always been a little bit more eclectic with my game taste. The first game that I really, really got into that introduced me to competitive gaming and just like opened my eyes to competitive gaming as a whole was a game called Natural Selection, which was a Half-Life mod, but still had Quake kind of physics, had bunny hopping, all that kind of stuff, air control.
Right.
And then that's kind of what segued into Quake for me, and then eventually into a game called Warsaw, which is like a really small little mod off the Quake engine, which I loved. Yeah, it's an amazing game. And CPMA, which is like Challenge Pro Mode Arena, which is another Quake mod that has full air control and uncapped bunny hopping. So I was real big on precise movement and getting my aim down. And I was getting to the point where I was really good at FPSs. And then I'd always played RTSs growing up. Warcraft 3, like Greg said, Money Maps, BGH. Me and my friends would come home from school, play 3v3 BGH, and just LAN all day. And so I was always familiar with RTSs, but never really had like a competitive drive to be the best, and never realized that that was even an option to do that professionally until my buddy Garrett Natagast, who's also a Terran player, introduced me to Team Liquid and Korean Pro League.
And when was pretty this? Much like, in, you know, because a lot of those games that you mentioned are actually really old.
Yeah, was probably around maybe 05, 04.
Oh, okay.
And then I started watching MSL, OSL, Pro League religiously. I mean, I was a fanatic. I was a total Terran fanboy, loved Leda, Up Magic, Flash, Fantasy. I mean, really got into it, and then I started realizing, like, you know, holy crap, these Korean guys are absolutely amazing gamers. Like, if you have an RTS background and you watch those old Pro League MSL OSL games, it's just like some of the plays they make are flat out brilliant. And I still feel like Brood War is a game that showcases that even more so than StarCraft 2. I feel like having the clunky units that required so much micro, like the old Dragoons and Goliaths and stuff like that, and just the lack of units bunching together in general, made for such a diverse game with really long battles, right. And it was just amazing. And StarCraft 2, I feel like, is still an absolutely amazing game, but some of the newbie friendly mechanics, like all of your units being able to stack into such a tight pack, creates a different dynamic where micro is much different. It's more based on like surface area and positioning before the battle even happens.
Right.
So yeah, once I had watched all those Pro League games, MSL games, I decided, you know, with the release of StarCraft 2 being announced, that I would try and get good. And I started playing iCup because that was really the only, that was the best training method for RTSs before StarCraft 2 came out. And I managed to get C+, B- level with Terran and Zerg. And that's pretty much what. Then I started playing in the beta a ton of games and just really boot camping StarCraft too hard. And that kind of what led me to where I am today.
I do have to say that, you know, it's comforting. And I think a lot of players out there, because, I mean, keep in mind, StarCraft II, definitely the first RTS for many, or maybe the first RTS that people are taking seriously. You know, like, of course, I think you're going to find a lot of people that, yeah, I played Command & Conquer, or I dabbled in this or that, you know, and I mean, I was certainly one of those guys, but for me, Brood War was certainly more of a spectator thing than it was even playing. So, you know, I think a lot of people that may have come from other games, there have been so many guys. Do you guys know who Ronald Rambo Kim is? You know, Counter-Strike player for Team 3D.
Good friend of mine.
Yeah, so, I know that dude. Good friend. Yeah. I mean, Rambo's like a great example. Guy was amazing in Counter-Strike 1.6. He would, like, dabble in Quake and be better than your average dude just joining a server. And he's, you know, he's pretty beast in StarCraft 2. He's just got that good gaming sense. So, you know, people that are good at other games, you can put in the time and effort to, you know, get better and get to that level. Maybe a little bit because of some of those mechanics that you mentioned in StarCraft 2, but that might be a debate for another time. In Control, your turn.
How it started with a, What's that?
No, I want to make sure it all ties back to you having your shirt off playing Rhett at BlizzCon 2000. No, you don't. I'm just kidding. You don't have to do that.
It actually started the competition a long time ago. There was a lot of really good people that competed. There were big guys, little guys, all shapes and sizes. But Merlin asked me to do it, so I went and I gave it a tug. And actually, the sword came right out of that stone, and the rest is history.
And now you win ProDOS games, I guess. Really?
You guys have shitty reactions to my amazing jokes that I mapped out that whole time. That whole time, I'm thinking in my head, how can I make a good joke? There it is.
I don't know about that one. You know what?
You don't know that one?
Well, I know that story, but, you know, I feel
Vinny Wheat needs to be reading some more books, man. You two need to get together, all right? You've been playing too many games.
It was all about the animated Sword in the Stone, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved that movie when I was a kid.
Yeah, he hasn't seen it yet.
I just did everything competitive, absolutely everything. I played GoldenEye, I played Mario Kart, Killer Instinct, and the friends that I can blame my friends, actually, the people I grew up with, like, our moms used to have to threaten us to go outside and play tennis for an hour, otherwise we couldn't play more games that night.
You're done.
So we'd like, we'd do it. And we had fun. We liked to go outside and do stuff. But when we came in, it was just hour after hour, Mario Kart, GoldenEye, Killer Instinct, all the time. And then we eventually gravitated to the computer. And at the time we played Warcraft 2, Red Alert. Actually, it wasn't Red Alert. Excuse me. It was Command & Conquer Gold, which I think is infinitely better. And it was a lot of fun. And that's where, like, all my cultivation got honed in on. Like, that's where I found StarCraft, and it was like, okay, this is a game that can't be mastered. It's insanely fun. It's like a combination of all of those things. And then I was hooked, so I played. I mean, at the other thing about it, too, that's kind of funny that just got me going is I was collecting Terranids for Warhammer 40,000. And Zerg is based on Terranids. So, like, aesthetically, I was a young kid, you know, I was like 11. So I was like, these are so cool. Ultras are amazing. And that's it, man. And then I've always been competitive. So it just kind of took off from there.
Well, I think that we can all agree that StarCraft, there's nothing not competitive about the game, whether you are playing the money maps you were talking about or 1v1, or, I mean, it's like, it's hard not to just take the game absolutely seriously and competitively. I think that, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why a lot of people will tune in and try to get some good advice from you guys. And with that, we're going to go ahead and go on to our next segment. It is basically called You're Doing It Wrong. And I know that there's a lot of stuff that I'm doing wrong. But these are actually a few things, you guys, that I see quite often brought up, or maybe I will sneak in a few things of my own. So you always got to be ready for that. But the first one that we're doing is actually protecting reinforcements. And the reason why I brought this one up is because, you know, instantly as a Zerg player, I'm thinking, yeah, man, versus a Terran, maybe I have some Lings out on the map, you know, take out some Marines back there. So there's a couple of approaches I want to take for this. First off, Pain User, with the Terran approach, how do you protect your reinforcements? And I'm sorry, I probably should have prefaced this with the guy was a Terran, and he was specifically asking, how do I properly protect my reinforcements? And, you know, I'm like, well, with that, I think a good way to spin it, Idra, is, well, then how do you go after those reinforcements? And then any sort of ProDOS perspective you want to give on that, Jeff, we'll do that. So, Pain User, let's start with you. You're Terran. You've just engaged in a battle versus a Zerg opponent. You got a light contain on. You need to rely on those reinforcements. How, you know, talk to me about this.
Okay, well, I guess the best way I could break it down is, like, there's two types of attacks, right? One, hopefully against a Zerg, you're going to have a lot of tanks and a lot of Marines, and you're going to try and get to a really good position and set up shop and just hang out and slowly creep towards a more advantageous position. And when you do that, you kind of want to leave a few cycles of your reinforcements back at home, because, one, you have to watch out for counterattacks, because Zerg counters are vicious. And if you don't have some troops back at base and at least a bunker for your reinforcements to hang out at, you can get all your Marines and excess tanks picked off along the way, and you really can't be losing those tanks and those Marines. So what I like to do is go in a couple waves where I leave a few production cycles back at my natural, leave like a sieged tank and a bunker and a few extra Marines just in case of a Ling counter, and have a really nice wall set up at your natural. That's super important. That helps protect your reinforcements as well. So the way you wall off your natural, how you orient your units at your natural back at base is almost as important as while you're pushing, but not quite. And then a different kind of attack where I guess you can't protect your reinforcements as well is something where you add a lot of production facilities, like a ton of Raxes and maybe an extra factory, and you're just rallying tons of Marines, Marauders, whatever you can make to his base. And in that situation, it's much more difficult to protect your reinforcements, but at the same time, it's much more important to get your reinforcements there faster, so you don't worry about it as much. You just rally everything in and you just go gung-ho.
Well, let me ask you a couple things then. You know, you keep a couple cycles behind, you know, the waves. Actually, that was something that someone had suggested. Another thing that a guy suggested, and I just wanted to get Terrence's take on it, is he was saying that sometimes if he was forced to rally on particular maps, he would actually use the destructible rocks as his rally point. And so it forces the units to attack move rather than just be like on a move command.
Well, I mean, I almost never rally. It totally depends. I guess if you were just rallying in tons of troops, I could see rallying to the destructible rocks be helpful in some way, yeah, I guess. But generally,
did you guys know that that worked? Because I was looking
at it.
No.
Yeah,
I haven't personally just went there and attacked.
Yeah, I haven't tried it, but Jeff obviously is a pro at this.
It's very rare that your reinforcements will get sniped like without you actively noticing. Like you're gonna see
because you're in battle and you're hearing exactly.
You're gonna go deal with it. It's very rare that you lose like a pack of reinforcements and you're just like, oh, like, where are my reinforcements? Why aren't they here? And you just go find a bunch of dead bodies in the middle of the map. It's not like the move command isn't really that big of a deal. And oftentimes you'll rally your production facilities to a single spot near your natural if you're not streamlining reinforcements in. So your troops will be hanging out there anyway, and they should automatically attack anything that comes within their vicinity.
Okay.
Assuming you don't have them on like hold fire.
So you got stuff. Your task for next week then, pain user, is to try that destructible rocks rally and see how that is.
I mean
you'd think that it would work with any race, so yeah. I saw Idra's face light up when we talked about that. Idra,
I'm just surprised because I would have expected them to move command to the rocks and then start attacking them.
Yeah,
it would come out attack move.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this guy's full of shit, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, we want to have this. And
if you right click destructible rocks with a select group of units, they just move up to it, right?
Yeah.
Am I correct on that? So why would rallying buildings?
I don't know. This is you know, I'm bringing it to you.
It's
brother.
Like if you tell units to attack an enemy target, they'll ignore any other target until they get there and attack that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
We will double check. And you know what? I will take pride knowing that I will be able to go back into this thread and go, last night on Inside the Game, you were proved wrong. And poor guy. So, okay. Well, Idra, let's talk about it from a Zerg perspective, too. Intercepting reinforcements. How important is it? How can it change the game? Are there any tricks you could use to make sure that you can do something like that? Do you even think about it?
It's incredibly important because if a Terran is doing any kind of attack before they're maxed, then the game is basically just delaying as long as you possibly can, because Zerg in that situation will almost always be out reinforcing Terran. So your goal is to buy as much time as possible, and counterattacks and preventing reinforcements are one of the best ways to do that. Because if they have to constantly send back their Marines to like protect the path between their base and the attack, then obviously they're not actually pressuring you there. The most common ways to do it are with Zerglings and Mutas, just because of the speed and mobility. I generally prefer Mutas, just because if you do Zerglings, eventually they're going to get worn down, they're going to die. But if you have a big pack of Mutas, they actually can't wait. They have to wait like 3 production rounds before they can send it without getting decimated. So, yeah, you should always try and have Zerglings out on the map, because counterattacks themselves are effective, and that is a good way to do it. But really, that's the main reason I still play Mutas instead of switching to Infestor ZVT. It's just because having that pack of Mutas flying around gives you so much control over what Terran's doing that I think it's worthwhile.
All right. Now, let's look at a Protoss point of view on this. In control, kind of the same question. I mean, how important is it to you? I mean, TVP, obviously a different matchup. Are you even ever put in a situation where, like, here's a chance for me to kill some reinforcements, et cetera?
Protoss don't have reinforcements.
Yeah, what is this concept?
They warp into your face.
No, I mean, I'm talking about,
can
like,
can you explain the question to them? The Zerg and Terran didn't understand that you were talking about killing reinforcements.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Like...
I know, it's weird for you guys. We'll do it slower. We'll do an inside the game for little people, too, and we'll have Terran and Zerg guests on there. We'll go, hey, guys, so today's segment, we're talking about killing other people's reinforcements. And the Zergs will go, hey, I understand now in control. Thank you. Thank you, Greg. Okay. It's situational. Protoss is not most of the time in a place where it's like, I'm being sieged, but if I can just get around his army behind it and kill his reinforcements, I'll be fine. So typically speaking, because it's more of a ball-style army, you have Phoenix or Dark Templar or perhaps Blink Stalkers if you're feeling very festive. The Phoenix are dangerous, though, especially against Terran, because if you do too much harassing of reinforcements, oftentimes they'll just take their Vikings and go right over to your Colossus and just pick them off, and then you feel really silly real quick. So usually the best way to go about that kind of a situation is with Dark Templar. And honestly, it's not necessarily reinforcements, but you're more likely trying to get them to be more attentive to their home, i.e. mineral lines or important structures like add-ons. Certainly, you know, there are times where you harass the reinforcements, but typically speaking, it's very situational.
And happening, obviously, much less in a PVT matchup. But, you know, we still got to get your perspective. But we're going to keep you on the spot, Jeff, as we talk about then our next concept for You're Doing It Wrong. And guys, I actually can't believe how much this is brought up. And I'm going to be so interested to hear your guys' answer. Whoever wants to talk about it first, I'm sure that you've read a thread on it. I wonder if you guys read threads and laugh. But that is ladder anxiety. I hear threads about it all the time. I've had Sir Scoot says he's afraid to get on. And you know, like, there is this intimidating, like, I'm going up against a human. I'm going in. Like, you know, what... Well, I want to talk about that. Maybe there's something that you can relay to the audience members that still have that problem. What do you think?
I've never really dealt with it. Is Jeff going? Just because the way I respond to losses, I just get pissed off and want to play more. So I've never really had that. I don't know.
Ever?
It's just... No, even from the beginning, it's just like... I think it's just because the result of being so competitive, like, you realize you want to win, and the only way to win is to keep playing. And that just kind of overrides anything else.
Okay. Jeff, what were you going to say?
Well, first and foremost, I want to confirm that that's something that I see a lot. You know, we three have a lot more experience, so this is something we've dealt with, and I'll speak to that in a moment, but... I coach a lot of individuals, and they, like, one of the first things that they have to overcome is they're saying, man, I'm really nervous. And no, it's not the ladder, but it's playing StarCraft in a, like, judgmental slash competitive atmosphere that for a lot of people acts as a barrier, because it's a macho game, it's a cerebral game, it's a physical game, it's a translation of your own ability to do something difficult. So in that competitive realm, a lot of people sit down and they're intimidated because there's people who are both just flat out better than them, but also kind of mean about it. So a lot of people go into the ladder, they lose a couple games, they get really frustrated. They can't talk to anyone about it because it comes off as like they're weak or, you know, it belittles themselves. So they feel ashamed about it. So they stick away from 1v1, which is very personal and very competitive. And it drives people away. And my biggest advice to everyone is, generally speaking, if this game's really important to you or fun and you get a lot out of it, spring for that one extra copy and make a name that you don't tell anyone about. You don't tell anyone, who, you know, you have no friends on the list. You have nothing. It's purely to ladder and to play privately. And in
that
situation,
guy, Jeff.
Who cares if you lose? Who cares if someone yells at you like you're nobody? It doesn't matter. And then get on your personal account and hop on a 2v2 with a friend. Do some UMSs. Do some, you know, whatever the heck it is people that don't play competitively do. And Taylor probably knows. That's what's up. No, I'm just kidding, man. But do something like that. The other step is take care of yourself mentally. Like, there are people – like, this game is so fun, and it offers so much to people that my fear is that people will take Greg's approach, which works for Greg, by the way. I'm not saying it doesn't work for him. It's not for everyone.
And some people, it obviously does.
Right.
Yeah.
And my fear is that they'll be like, if I just keep playing, and they keep playing, and then they get to this point where the game's not fun anymore. But it was like a self-inflicted situation because they forced – They force arbitrary standards on the situation. Like, they were like, well, if I just keep playing, I'll stop being mad. Sometimes it's not how it works. So step away, go play some
Marvel vs.
Pawn, go play Counter-Strike with the – yeah, go play some other games. Do something else for a little while. Go outside. Come back. Give it another shot and tell yourself, listen, I'm going to try to have fun. I'm going to try to get better. Because and I guess to speak to the experience part, that's part of the reason why it doesn't happen for me, because when I suck or when I lose, it's fun for me to improve upon that. That's like part of the challenge. If I was unbeatable and amazing, I would have fun being that, but I don't know if it would be for me. I don't know.
Payton user, any comments of your own or anything to respond to Idra or Inc?
I mean, Jeff covered pretty much all of it, but I have a lot of students that that, you know, will come at me and say, you know, oh, hey, my friend is killing me in this particular matchup. I really want to work on this. And, oh, my friend, sometimes people will say, like, oh, you know, my friends make fun of me because my ladder rating isn't above, you know, 50% win rate. And it's just like, my best advice to try and just sum up everything that's been said so far would just be, like, if the game is important to you and you do enjoy it and you want to get better, just try and remove ego from the whole situation. Just remove your ego from losing and don't take it that seriously, because it's really not that important. At the end of the day, if you're 1,000 and 1,000 on the ladder and you can beat someone who's 1,200 60% of the time, I mean, you're obviously a very skilled player. If you can beat someone who has a better like ratio than you, or who has less losses than you,
slightly favored.
Yeah, all that matters is your raw talent, how good you are as a player, period. So, I mean, just don't worry about ladder stats, ladder anxiety. And, I mean, honestly, like, I feel like the anxiety of a tournament, if you're letting ladder anxiety affect you, I mean, that's like the least of your worries. You need to address that, remove the ego from the situation, just make it a relaxed, practice-oriented thing where you're just trying to get better. And then right. Worry about, like, you know, getting into a tournament or something like that if it's a competitive thing for you. If you're just anxious about ladder in general, well, then I don't know. But
I used to believe it or not, I used to run a little bit. Used to run some track, and I used to always tell my dad, this was like, you know, middle school, high school. I'm like, God, Dad, I'm like crazy nervous. I ran hurdles, was actually pretty good at it. I'm like crazy nervous, Dad, and he's like, well, you know what, Wheat. No, he didn't really call me Wheat. You know what, Wheat? It means you care about it. You know, and I still to this day, I'll never forget, because I'm like, every time I get nervous about something, whether it be the first match that we're about to broadcast at MLG, or whether it be, you know, bringing back all the shows, like, I will have that nervousness, and then, you know, it goes away. And for me, it's like I've kind of like a combination of Idra and what you guys said. Is that I find that if I just hit fine match, it's like whatever, you know, just go in and I have my little separate account, and it works for me, because at the beginning it was just kind of like, oh, well, or I could play the AI, which would be just as fun, I'm sure. And then it's like completely not satisfying, and I'm like, why does it even matter? But for those of you having ladder anxiety, you know, well, if you're like Greg, you're just like, go, 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 go. But I think some
you have
really
to learn
good
to focus the hatred on you. You just have to learn to focus the hatred on your opponent, not the game, and then you don't get that problem Jeff was talking about.
Release your anger.
You sound like Darth Vader, dude.
Right?
Just learn to focus your hatred.
That was awesome because Jeff was actually like Darth Vader, and Pain User was actually like the Emperor. That was pretty good. I guess that makes Idra Anakin, so...
It's working! It's working!
Oh, wow. That's so awesome.
They really did make a movie centered around an 8-year-old boy.
Yeah. Going to the dark side. Guys, audience, I'm talking to you. I'm addressing you. What are you doing wrong? Is there anything that you think about? You know, some of the questions that you guys submitted for today's show actually are right along that line. Like, you know, hey, guys, what am I doing wrong? So email us. Go ahead and fire us an email. You can send that to itg@onemoregame.tv. Anything you'd like to discuss with our hosts on some of the things that you think you might be doing wrong. Talk about some better practices. You know, next week, one of the things I definitely want to talk about is a problem that I know that I seem to have. It could be all-encompassing. Read a few threads on as well. And that's just, quite frankly, like tech versus units. And you know, having a better game sense and knowing which way to go. I know there's a lot of reading there, understanding your matchups, et cetera. But maybe we can talk about even some more, you know, very basic things that players can work on to try to know you should tech now, should get, you know, more units now, et cetera. So that'll be one of the things that we aim for next week. So that'll be happening there. So, guys, we're going to take a quick break. And then what I think the plan will be is we're going to come back. We're going to do our mailbag segment. Then we're going to open up the phone lines, and we're going to go ahead and kick off our first show with kind of a free-for-all. Any of the topics that we discussed tonight or any questions that you're going to have for our host, we're going to be shooting those out. So without further ado, guys, In Control's moving in. He's ready for that break. Guys, do not go away. We'll be right back. More Inside the Game coming your way. Guys, welcome back to our next hour, top of the hour, I guess you could say. We started a little bit late, but we're returning here for the second part of Inside the Game. Welcome back to our hosts as well, LG Pain User, EG Idra, and EG In Control. Our next segment, don't forget you can mail us itg@onemoregame.tv for You're Doing It Wrong. And, of course, you can also send us email for this segment. If Battle.net had email, of course, guys, we can barely get 100 people in a chat channel there. But if it had email, I suspect this is the kind of email that you guys would actually be getting in your email box. And I have to give, you know, there was a lot of really bad questions, guys. I won't lie. I'm sure you can imagine. But there was some... it's true.
Bad questions?
But there were some good ones. There were definitely some good ones. So we're just gonna address with some questions. Now, a lot of these questions are addressed to obviously specific members based off of their race, but I want you guys to feel free to hop in anytime you have maybe don't even agree with what they're saying, or whatever. So we're gonna start with Idra, and I love this question because I have it myself. So Harrison, whether that's his real name, I do not know. But Harrison writes, I'm a Diamond Zerg player, and I have a specific question for Idra. Occasionally when I'm aggressive with my Lings in the early game, I can often manage to make it into my enemy's base. I think we can imagine this scenario. I will immediately go after the worker line. In order to maximize, this is the question, Idra. So in order to maximize the effectiveness of my units, how should I properly control my Lings? Should I just move them, then A move into the worker line? Should I shift attack individual probes? And then he's got a part two, but let's start there.
It's very, very situational. If you have a lot of Zerglings and the Protoss doesn't have any units around, then you just want to attack move into the mineral line. If you have a lot of Zerglings and he has a lot of units or he has any attacking units near the mineral line, you want to run into the middle of it and hit hold position so that they're all just there and hit the probes instead of running off and attacking the units. And if you have a few Zerglings in any situation, you want to shift attack probes. If you can't, ideally you want to sit there and watch them and target ideal probes every time your Zerglings kill one, like you attack one, and then you move on and target the next one that's now in a good position. Otherwise, you can just queue through them and shift attack.
Yeah, so I'll admittedly say, you know, the hold position trick that you talked about, obviously use it in other situations, but I hadn't actually thought about it. I guess especially for a really saturated worker line, that's got to be really phenomenal. So, well, thank you for that one. What, did you have something else to add to it?
I was just going to say, it's the only way to actually make them attack the probes in that situation, besides shift queuing, which doesn't work when you have a lot of Zerglings. It's incredibly inefficient.
Right. So then his second part, I think, is talking about what you're mentioning and maybe having too many Zerglings. So he says, when I'm attacking with Lings and sometimes I have, and he puts in quotes, spare Lings running around trying to find an area to attack. And he says, should I just be A moving? But I think he's trying to say, because I have the same, let's say they go in on a cannon, they're A move, they go in on a cannon, but you got like five Lings that are just doing this stupid dance around the cannon. Should the player be focusing on trying to take those Lings out and doing other things? Like, what would be your suggestions for that?
Against a cannon, yeah. You should just manually move them off to other targets. When I read that question, I figured he was thinking more in terms of big battles, like engaging against another army with Zerglings. And in that situation, it's more about how you set up for the battle. That's really, really big with Zerg, because especially with Zerglings, you're actually going to have too many units to actually have everything engaging at once if you attack on one front. You really have to have a flank set up so you're attacking from multiple angles to actually get all those Zerglings into the battle. Okay. So it's more about setting up than actually controlling during it.
All right. Fantastic. I think those are some great points. Hopefully Harrison is happy for that. Our next question is going to be for In Control. And, In Control, what are the key points for executing a Protoss air strategy? Now, he goes on and he says kind of like basic build order. How detailed you want to go is up to you. what to look for regarding your opponent when it's safe, not safe to play it, and other concepts that you can explain. He goes on to say he's currently a Platinum Protoss player on EU, so you get an idea of his skill, having gone from Bronze to Platinum on just doing Foregate every single game. And he says it works. So, but now his advance is getting slowed because the quality of players is increasing, something that we see with a lot of our Protoss players. And he wants to diversify his play. He says he gets the nerd chills every time that you put down a Stargate because he knows that the rest of the game will be awesome to watch. So he wants to be able to basically do this kind of fancy Stargate fun like you.
Well, there's a lot of different styles to be taken into account. I guess to hit on the general statements that entail Protoss versus X Stargate play is that typically speaking, well, it's hard to answer this question actually all encompassing like that. I guess I would say the standard like PVZ is that you go Void Ray first and then you follow it up with four or five Phoenix. And what you're looking to do is delay, slow, or kill the third of the Zerg. Because typically speaking, if you take that Stargate play, you've either done it after a fast expansion or you're doing it off of one base, and they're kind of suspect of that. They're a little bit put off by the fact that you haven't moved down and expanded just yet. So they're kind of reacting in a different way, I guess, you know, okay, than they would in a standard game. So what you have to be looking to do is make a beeline to that objective or somewhere therein and then fan out and take the other alternatives. So if those scraggling overlords, the towers, just general map control, give yourself space between yourself and the roaches that he has perhaps made. But what it is it's more of a, like, you're incurring a reaction from them with the risk of punishing them for ignorance with a victory. Like, if they see it coming, they get themselves the right information and they react appropriately, they have to build spore crawlers, they have to build extra queens, they have to incorporate hydras at some point. And then any reaction in and around that level is just plus or minus good for you, right? Like, they could overreact and build six queens or four spore crawlers, or they could underreact and build nothing at all, and then you kill them. And you have to base your strategy off of that reaction. So if they go overboard, then you want to take perhaps a more aggressive macroeconomic stance. If they go underboard, then you want to pour it on with like four or five gateways and come after them and punish them for not taking you seriously, essentially. And that's just kind of like the general idea in Protoss vs. Zerg with that style. The other one is like the revealed Phoenix, where you're going one or two Stargate Phoenix after standard play, but it's instead of going Immortal Colossus or something, and you get six or seven Phoenix or even a few less, maybe five or six, and then you set the rally to your Phoenix and you go after him. And here you're trying to pick off queens. You're trying to punish him for being unprepared. And of course, that's really reliant on them not knowing that you're going Phoenix up until that point. So if it ever gets found or had, then you got to spring it early. But with that, it's again the same kind of idea. Only you're trying to catch them with their pants down, essentially. Like, oh no, you don't have spore crawlers. You only have the three queens. I pick up your three queens. I snipe them. I'm killing overlords. I'm picking off drones, and they're scrambling to react while back at home. You're adding gateway units for a big timing. Or something like that. Or perhaps you're taking a third base that they can't deal with because they're so occupied economically with what you're doing with the Phoenix. And then in PVT, it's quite simple. I use the Phoenix just to prolong the life of the Colossus is the way to look at it. But it has a nice option in the sense that if they don't respect the Phoenix, now you get map control. There's no unit that's as fast as the Phoenix. It's absolutely insane that it moves around the map. It has a run and gun ability.
It is insane.
It is insane. I mean, they can go downhill real, real quick on your opponent. So if they're like, oh no, he's got Phoenix, I have to make tons of Vikings, that's the best reaction because then you can overpopulate your ground army. And sure, maybe they kill all your Phoenix, maybe they kill your Colossus, but they have like 10 Marines and 5 Marauders to deal with the rest of your army. And that's nice. Of course, that's exaggerations, but that's kind of like what you're thinking. And then that's pretty much how I like to use in PvT. And then PvP... I've been saying this for a while, but I think there are game changers in Protoss versus Protoss. If you can, what I typically do is I'll get like three or four Colossus out in a straight up two base versus two base Protoss versus Protoss game. But then I'll throw down two Stargates and get out 15 Phoenix, and there's nothing they can do about it because their Stalkers die to my Colossus and their Colossus die to my Phoenix in the big engagement. And it's really hard to lose from there as a Protoss. So, in PvP, they have the downhill ability as well, pretty strongly. And just speaking to the generalities, just map control. Don't let them have the towers. Harass them inner lines. Force the cannons. That's really unprofessional.
At least we know you have an iPhone.
Yeah.
Right.
Super awesome. Just force the static response from them. Make them stay at home. Make them make photon cannons. Hell, they might go blink stalkers because they feel like they need to catch up to your Phoenix. And all the while, you're just adding another Colossus, because what happens in that fight is the gateway units are the first ones to go, and your Phoenix are only shooting at their Colossus. And that's it's almost impossible to lose from there.
Well, hopefully, I understand it is pretty difficult because he didn't give us too much, you know, scenario to kind of work off of. But this guy says he's a huge fan and owes everything to you about getting into StarCraft II. So hopefully he could take that, break it down a little bit. I know a lot of it's play and practice and experiment. And, you know, eventually we'll talk a lot about refining some of those builds and how people can do it as well. Pan user, your turn. Blinky writes... can you turn your Skype sounds up? Oh, wait, no, that wasn't the question. That wasn't the question.
Are those coming through?
They're coming through.
I like Katie's question.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, they're coming through, brother. Oh, I'm going to give you a second. So I think Pain User knows how to pull this one off. Pain User, if you can listen and kill Skype sounds at the same time. Ooh. I'll pull out this question. You ready?
Indeed.
All right, indeed. Hit me. Blinky writes, can you give us a mental breakdown of how you determine your initial build and your transitions over the course of a game? He says, assuming it's a he, I tend to go into matches saying, quote, I will do this and have a plan of action, but then I may need to alter that due to what an opponent is doing, and it really throws them off. So asking the question, should I go into each game open-minded? And how much does that change from my mindset in a tournament versus ladder? So I guess, you know, if you're loading up your Zerg, you're like, okay, cool, I'm going to hatch first. And then something happens where it's like, that's a bad idea. Suddenly, it's like he falls apart. So can you give us some sort of, like, mental breakdown on, you know, from the moment of the match? And then go ahead. Yeah, you should shoot.
I think it's a great question. And especially... noting the fact that it can be different for tournaments and for ladder. The way I go into it for ladder, just like a mental breakdown, is I try and practice my safest, most macro-oriented build orders on ladder. And that gives you a lot of experience tweaking your macro builds. So like he just said in his question, he's like, when I have to go off of my initial plan of action, it really throws me off. So what you want to do is you want to practice those safe macro builds, like, you know, a gasless one racks fast expand, or like a racks fact quick CC and add two more racks, depending on the matchup. There's all kinds of different builds, but I'm not going to go into all that. But you want to practice good, solid macro builds. And then on the ladder, people are going to throw a lot of different curveballs your way. And that's how you figure out how to adapt your build. Based on those situations. And it's all just situational experience. And the more situational experience that you add to a specific build order, the better you're going to be with that build order and the more effective it's going to be every time you try and execute it. So for ladder, that's a really good way to like train those quick reactions and those weird situations that you get thrown into in ladder because people are playing to win. And they're going to see what you do and they're going to try and obviously exploit it. And then for tournaments... I try and play the player more in tournaments. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But sometimes I will alter my build order and maybe not use something I'm nearly as comfortable with, just on the off chance that, like, maybe I'll have like a thought or a premonition about the way somebody plays and just be like, you know what, like, this might really work against them, and I'll try something completely different. And it's just based strictly on knowing their play style and how they like to play and what they do.
Are the hosts, Idrin and Control, are you kind of in the same boat as far as that's concerned? I mean, ladder versus tournament. You know, ladder, obviously, you're kind of going in. But in tournament, are you playing the player more than you're kind of like playing the matchup for sure?
Definitely. I found I had a lot more success when I actually just go ahead and go with hunches and premonitions, like Taylor said. even if it's not completely logical or rational, like you don't know why, you get a feeling he's going to do something. And really at this level, when we play as much as we do, a lot of things really become ingrained and you're not consciously thinking about them, but sometimes that'll just click and you're like, okay, I've seen him do this before at some point, or I've seen a lot of Protosses do this on this map at some point, and it all just comes together. And a lot of the time it's really good to rely on hunches, especially if you practice a lot, because then you can really trust them. They're based off experience, not just random.
It's like an episode of The Mentalist, man. At the end, it just all comes together. And actually, I've never seen an episode of The Mentalist. I just imagine that's how the show works out. At the end, you're like, oh, yeah, I get it now. What about you, Jeff? I think that you're probably going to say versus the player, too.
I actually probably do it too much. One of the things that has held me back in previous tournaments is that I'm too willy-nilly. I'm too unrefined. And that's not that I'm not practicing. It's not that I'm not working on my game. It's more that I go into it with like, well, I've got these six builds I feel really comfortable with. And then it comes to a moment where it's like, and then I make a snap call and it's not always the best one. So to a certain extent, premonition and intuition and going off the cuff is good. And it makes you a more difficult player to prepare for, but also it makes you more dangerous against your opponents because you're just more well-rounded. But at the same time, it really helps to have the refinement for your gameplay where you're like, okay, I'm going to make this decision, but it's that decision that I've practiced down to a T and I can execute very, very well. So you're very comfortable making that choice. Perhaps you decide to do it late, but you're doing something that you feel very confident.
On the flip side, you can kind of get complacent doing that a little bit too. So you always have to kind of be on your toes, right? I mean, you can
right.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. All right, let's see if we have one more. Actually, we got a ton of questions. I don't even know. Let's just throw this one out there. This one came from Twitter on ITG_SC2, and he says, "Does Idra think that making queens a massive units would help balance PVZ Phoenix Void Ray play?" I figured you guys would have a fun with that one.
There's a lot of back and forth there because you get the Voider damage for the bonus versus massive, but then they can't be gravitoned. And they would also be able to break force fields then, so that would be a pretty big buff for Zerg early game. It would fix a lot of problems. I don't know if it would actually go too far. That would be really, really powerful.
I could tell from Jeff's face that he's like, this is crazy talk here. I mean,
No. You can tell from Greg's reaction. When Greg says, I'm not sure if it would be good, if it would go too far. That means it's too far.
That means it's too awesome.
I said Infestors would be overpowered. I was wrong about that one, too.
Well,
you're wrong about a lot of things. It's non-unique, my friend. Like,
well, what
if a queen was massive?
Yeah, that'd be awesome, dude. Uh-oh. Yeah, I'm turning it on. Dude, do you realize?
Greg, my favorite part is Greg goes, well, there's give and take. The Void Ray would do more damage. What? It's I'm like, Greg, I've got a $5 bill. I'll trade you for $100. You're like, well, there's some give and take there, but I'll take it. Like,
Plus 20% for his massive is pretty big. No, I said it would be a Zerg buff, but it's not completely, and I didn't think through all the force field stuff. No, but I think that would be a really good thing to not be able to be trapped up your ramp indefinitely just because you get a sentry in range of it.
Like, I think Marauders should be massive as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Says does have some validity to it. I would be okay with approaching the force field, but certainly it's not with making the queen massive. I think that would be ludicrous as it currently stands because the queen's a pretty damn good unit, by the way, guys. And I don't think we've even realized the full potential of it just yet. There's a guy who's spreading out a style that people are using more and more. Like six queens can hold off everything the Protoss makes for the first 20 minutes, and that's pretty awesome. So if you make a massive, I'll switch to Zerg. I swear to God.
You heard it here first.
Switch to Zerg.
Well, I mean...
It only works as long as Protoss keeps attacking into it. Like, you make that many queens early on, and they just play defensive, take a third macro up. Zerg's in pretty shitty shape.
There you go. Yeah. The answer. Pain user, what do you... You know, you probably don't care. You're like, whatever, all day. Make them...
No, I mean... You know, it's like, I think that
you don't
something
care, dude.
Has to be done about force field, but what's the proper solution?
Well, I'm interested here because all three of you have brought up the force field, even our resident Protoss in control. So, you know, let's actually Well, I mean, I probably know why Idra doesn't, you know, necessarily like it. Jeff, you had mentioned something about maybe it, not look at the queen, take a look at the force field. So did you, Pain User. I want to go a little bit more in depth into that. Why? You think it's breaking?
I mean, no, I mean, it's not that it's like completely 100% broken. It's not that. I just really feel like they didn't put enough thought into the whole development of force field. I mean, the way I look at it is like it's a tier one ability that comes out of a unit for very cheap energy cost. It's only 50. You know, 10 sentries maxed out on energy is 40 force fields. That's a lot if you really think about it. And the problem for me is that there's nothing that you can do skillfully as a player to do anything about the force fields once it's happened. So like once you go into a battle, once you commit, you engage, and a portion of your army gets split, there's nothing that you can really do out of that situation as a skilled player to better your chances, to help yourself out. It's like, it's said, it's done, period. You're going to lose those units. He can back off. And you can do things before the battle. You can push and pull. You can try and bait force fields. You can blow a stim. I mean, and just like mob in on the Protoss and try and avoid force fields altogether.
Blow a stim sounds so wrong, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty... I don't really like doing that.
Stim
in onto the Protoss. It's oftentimes it doesn't end up the best for you, and you're committing 100%. Like once you stim in and go after the Protoss army, there's no backing out. I think it's kind of similar with Zerg. It's like it just creates this option where it gives the Protoss so much power to dictate like when and where the fight happens, and then they can also just use chokes.
They can really, make really, chokes.
They can make chokes. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
They
can
use in chokes. So
Jeff,
like...
first off, I want to point out that I guess kind of the irony that everyone in chat is like, yeah, this is awesome. Pain User talking about tier one units. That's merry. Jeff, though, it's haha. Because
yeah, I get it. You're like
okay.
Guys,
it's like, I'm sick of it. Okay.
I'm not
make them massive. Come on, let's solve this now. Jeez.
It's just very different. You can't really compare like spellcasting
I know.
Units to combat units.
It is different. Let's find out how different it is from our Protoss. Jeff, the interesting thing about this, of course, I want to hear your comments, but the interesting thing about this, and you know, your guys are all right. They've put it into the game. It's become basically an essential utility of the Protoss. So it's going to be really hard to take out and not have this gap in the Protoss. So let's hear your thoughts on it, Jeff. I'm sure that you've spoken on this before many times.
It's interesting. I think the force field, I'll agree with Taylor in the sense that it was put into the game early on and it might not have necessarily been thought through in its entirety. And what I mean by that is that the force field and its longevity with Protoss is speculative. If you were to go back in time and perhaps balance the game there could be some changes made. But in order to look at the force field now, like they've balanced the Protoss around the force field, essentially. They've left the force field untouched and they've balanced other units around the force field. So if you were to change the force field itself, you run the risk of completely disrupting the flow of the entire game because all things have been considered outside the force field. And I know I've said that three times now, but I'm trying to drive that point in. So I think that's really problematic as far as discussion goes. Like, what do we do with that? I feel like it's dangerous to talk about because you do one thing and it completely breaks the game for 2 months. And like an MLG is completely ruined by it. You know, that would suck ass.